Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
In the Pork Chop Express, and I'm talking to whoever's listening out there.
It's a pretty amazing planet we live on here, and a man would have to be some kind of fool to think we're all alone in this universe.
There is a hidden world where ancient evil weaves a modern mystery.
What's going on here? Is this some kind of
magic? The darkest magic.
They call it Little China.
Finally, we shall bring order out of chaos.
It's where big trouble was waiting for Jack Burton.
Who? Jack Burton. Me.
Jack.
Jack.
Jack!
Welcome to Rewatchability. It's the podcast where we rewatch old movies and see them through the modern lens.
Oh, and today we are looking back on a good one. It has transformed, I think, kind of 180 from when it came out.
For sure. I'm Robert LaRonde. With me, as always, is
Blaine Waters.
And before we get into this crazy movie.
Like, certifiably insane.
Yes. Yep. We first would like to thank our Patreons. Those are the people who give us a little bit of money each month, and that helps us keep the podcast running.
Mm-hmm.
And in return, we give you a few perks, like you get the podcast early and ad-free.
Yeah, you can also do the double or nothing, where you put money down.
The and nothing we... or double, do you mean?
Yeah, right, the nothing or double. In reference to this movie we're going to be talking about.
Yes.
So, Rob, when was the first time you saw this movie?
Okay. So, I saw this movie a long time ago.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know, 9 or 10, and I think that my stepdad was watching it.
I like how we haven't said the title of this. Like, it's going to appear in the room and hurt us.
Like, accompanied by a gong sound.
The movie that shall not be named.
We are talking about Big Trouble in Little China.
Oh, yeah. It's a – I mean, there's a lot to talk about. I want to – so you were watching this with your – stepdad.
Well, I don't think I was watching it with him. Okay. We didn't really do things together because I did not like him.
Fair enough.
And his life.
Right. Okay.
But he did watch a lot of action movies and a lot of like karate movies. He loved like anything where like a white dude knew how to kick some ass. He was down.
That's great. So he was like a diehard fan, Lethal Weapon. He
more
was
like all... Chuck Norris.
Oh, okay.
You know, like that sort of.
Steven Seagal.
Yeah, that sort of style.
Right.
And so I happened to see him watching this, and I did not know how to fathom what I was seeing, because I was seeing a man expand.
And it wasn't just... Monty Python.
No.
It was a different movie.
Well, I mean, it was clearly like an action movie with martial arts. So, like, I knew what was happening. I knew that there was good guys and bad guys. There was probably somebody's girlfriend that needed to be rescued. But I did not understand why this man was inflating and then exploding.
Yeah.
And, That was what I was left with for the next 28 years or however long it's been since I watched this movie.
So you only saw kind of that part of the movie. You saw like excerpts from it.
Yeah, I don't know if I actually sat through the whole thing. I just remember the truck. I remember Kurt Russell. I remember the guy inflating.
Yeah.
And then I remembered that I did not want to watch any more of the John Carpenter movies for a long time. Because it just seems so, like, what is this? What am I? I don't. Then, you know, I grew up. I matured. And I realized that things that are bad are actually good.
Thanks, culture, for 180-ing on that. That's really nice.
So I was really happy that we would get the opportunity to revisit Big Trouble in Little China, finally face my childhood fears of inflating.
Yeah. Inflation, it'll get you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really will.
And it has. But Blaine, when was the first time that you saw Big Trouble in Little China?
I had a very similar experience. I remember I got like a TV from my uncle. He would give like big presents, and I've met him like three times in my life.
They were stolen.
That I'm pretty sure.
Fell off the back of a truck.
Yeah, no, he is into petty larceny.
Chinatown.
He is. I mean, the last time I met him, I came into the room and I was like, last time I saw you, I was 15, but you had 10 fingers back then.
Hey, wait. My grandpa was missing fingers. Is there something wrong with that?
No,
what is that supposed to mean?
I don't know what it means, but I know the story he told is not accurate.
Okay.
No, it might be. I just like to imagine that he's involved in all these crazy things.
Well, but there aren't that many good ways to lose a finger.
Yeah.
Unless you're a chef, I think.
Yeah, I
it's
know.
Suspicious.
Yeah.
Or my grandpa. It was legit.
Okay. The Yakuza for your grandpa. So I got a TV, and my mom was like, okay, well, we'll hook up to the cable. You can put it in your room. But I was young. I was like, you know,
right.
12,
you weren't
13.
Ready.
And there was like the kind of Friday Nights Without Borders. Do you remember that?
No.
It was like on Showcase in Canada.
Oh, was it porn?
It was Baby Blue
like
movies.
Softcore.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
And
I saw it, but I probably just didn't watch the title.
And so every now and again, there would be like a lead-in movie to that, or this would be that.
Right.
And it would be like a crazy, violent thing that would happen that
right.
I shouldn't have been watching and getting away with and feeling really cool that I was watching it. And this was one of them. And it terrified me on so many levels. It felt icky. I remember the next day, like,
Mom,
going to,
I feel icky. Who touched you?
It was like everything had a weird sheen to it after watching the movie. The next day, like,
did you drink any magic potions?
I feel so good right now. The next day, I went to school and I was like, did you guys see last night on TV? There was this movie where this guy went into Chinatown, he expanded and blew up, but then there was
Forget
a brain
it,
that like had a whole bunch of eyeballs in it, and there was like it was in Chinatown. I can't think of the title because I didn't see it. I came in halfway through, and it was really weird. And everyone was like, "You made it up." They didn't believe me,
right?
And I didn't know about it until like in my late 20s. Someone was like,
"That was a phenomenon that doesn't exist anymore."
Yeah.
Like you can't like be half watching TV late at night and something weird just appears in front of your eyes.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And if it does, it becomes like a viral video now. Like that Too Many Cooks thing.
Right.
You know, like that was trying to be that.
But that's still television. Like we don't even – who uses television?
Mm. That's a fair thing to say.
You're just going to get more episodes of 30 Rock. That's all. Nothing horrifying about that.
Yeah. I mean I think I saw most – foreign films, like when I was very, very young,
right.
That I've watched in my life, because
yeah.
They were like either had sex in them or had violence in them, mm-hmm. And they would never be on regular TV.
I remember this Mexican horror film that
yeah.
scared and fascinated me.
Do you remember what it was called?
No, it was in Spanish.
The best Spanish horror film I've ever seen is Wreck. You ever seen that?
No.
It's like a first person. Ah, so good. Anyway, if you're still hung up on Halloween, go watch it, audience. But let's get back to this movie. I was terrified. You were terrified. I can't wait to talk about it with you.
But so did you watch it at any point after your initial inoculation with Big Trouble in Little China?
No. No. This is the first time I've watched it after that. And there's been callbacks in culture. Like there's even a pizza joint on Spadina that's like Big Pizza in Little Chinatown or what. You know, it's everywhere. And I just watched The Thing at Cinesphere.
Right.
So John Carpenter is big in my mind right now. And the fact that he made this movie is just fucking weird. It's
yes.
weird. It's such a departure It's still Kurt Russell.
But is it a departure?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I haven't seen Ghost of Mars. I haven't seen, like...
You haven't seen Ghost of Mars?
I haven't seen his, like, weirdest stuff, so this seems like a departure, because I know the thing, you know? So, do you want to, for maybe people like us, that it's only this nightmare they talk about with their therapist, can you run it down for the audience at home?
I will try.
Okay.
So, it starts sort of strangely with the dude from X-Files... like one of the Men in Black government conspiracy, the guy who always talks to Mulder. He is interviewing this older Chinese dude, mm-hmm. and you know he just wants to find out what happened, like what went on,
right?
And he says, if I'm going to agree to be your lawyer, I just have to ask one thing: do you really believe in magic? And then he holds up his hands and he does like a little like Raiden thing.
Yeah.
Just like lightnings, you know.
Between
his
hands.
It's like a Tesla coil.
Right. Yeah. He's a human Tesla coil. Did you ever do that when you were younger? Like go to like the science center and touch that ball that made your hair stand on end?
I didn't get to go to the science center.
Oh, God. I'm sorry.
I know what you're talking about, though. Okay. I've seen it on movies.
Yeah. It's called like a Trachtenberg device or something. I don't know. It makes your hair stand. But like that's kind of what it is. It's like this spark between two.
So you're saying he was using science, not ancient Chinese magic.
Oh, as we'll see, it's all science.
Okay. So he tells the story of Jack Burton, played by Kurt Russell, who is this sort of big, sort of brawny truck driver dude who his idea of life is driving down the highway, sermonizing on his CB radio while eating a giant hoagie.
It's the biggest hoagie. I think he stole it from the people that were trying to make the Guinness World Book of Records. Like, it's giant. And he is, he's sermonizing, like you said. He's kind of giving us his facts of life.
Yeah. What it's like for him aboard the Pork Chop Express, as he calls his vehicle.
Yeah, it's spray painted on the side of his truck, so we know that it's his vehicle.
Yeah. It's very classy. I like it already.
Yeah, and he's in kind of like this whole, like, I don't know how, it's like a A-frame shirt. I like the no sleeves. And then it has like, it's like a Hawaiian sunset on it or something?
I don't know. There's some sort of like, I assume it's Chinese characters.
Right, and he's in jeans and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like your stereotypical, he is from Die Hard. He's the knockoff Die Hard guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, John McClane.
And he has a delivery in San Francisco, Chinatown, so he goes and he does that. And he finds himself playing this game against this guy whose name is Wang Chi. And they play all night and he fleeces him. He beats him.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what game they're playing. It's some sort of dominoes thing.
Yeah.
But
Mahjong, maybe?
Yeah. And he wins like $1,000 from him. Right. And the guy is obviously upset.
Yeah. But back in the 80s, $1,000 was worth like $100 million today. Inflation. It'll get you. Right?
It's still a lot of money, for sure. Yeah, okay. I'll play you for $1,000. But they do like a double or nothing thing where he says he's going to cut the bottle. But anyway, the point is the guy loses. The Chinese guy loses.
There's so much that I feel like any other movie would be setting up for a callback. That's never called back to. He never has to like chop a bottle in half later.
Oh, well, I'm going to blow your mind. It does get called back to because that's part of the motif of Kurt Russell's character is he is a man who is all about the reflexes. So when when he chops the bottle, it goes flying out and Kurt Russell catches it with his hand.
Well, we already know about his reflexes because he said that in his sermons.
He doesn't even barely have to look at the road.
It's all the reflexes. Yeah.
Yeah. But so he needs to get this $2,000 from this Chinese guy, and so he's not going to let him go about his business until he has it. But the guy says, first, we have to stop at the airport to pick up my girlfriend.
Right.
So they go there.
And make a big deal about her having green eyes.
They do.
This is the thing. It's like the woman in this movie had green eyes because that's like it comes back. That's a callback that comes back later.
Yeah.
That's part of the plot.
That's right. You're wondering, why is this Wang Chi guy obsessed over his girlfriend's eyes? I have other parts that I'm interested in.
Right, yeah.
You know,
I'm down
the
here.
The intellect. But while they're at the airport, some thugs, they're coming in to kidnap this woman, and Kurt Russell sort of gets in the way, and so...
It's so weird. Like, he sees Kim Cattrall, and he's like, who is she? It's like, I don't know. She's someone in New York at the airport? Like...
Yeah. She's like, Kim Cattrall.
Like, I don't know. Like, is your friend going to be able to be like, oh, that's so-and-so? It's like New York. There's millions of people.
Well, but he does know who it is. He says, she's trouble. Not big trouble.
No.
That is not the trouble being referred to in this film. Don't worry.
Yeah, it's so weird. Yeah, it's just a weird introduction. And he goes over and starts hitting on her, and she's kind of appalled by that. But then her friend gets – the woman she's waiting for kind of gets kidnapped by these people.
Yeah, well, they try to kidnap her, but then they end up taking the other girl who is Wang Chi's girlfriend.
Yeah.
And
it's very awkward. It's an awkward scene. They leave the airport with someone at gunpoint. And they don't call the cops because they don't want to get cops killed. You know, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe call the police.
Yeah.
It's just it's a weird, awkward scene. I didn't like it.
But they go chasing after them in the truck, and they end up sort of driving all through the narrow streets of Chinatown, and they end up in this alley where they witness a funeral procession.
Yeah.
And then a whole bunch of, like, gang people come out, like, you know.
Da-na-da-da-na, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-
slaughter. They, like, a whole bunch of people machine gun those guys, and then, like, a whole bunch of other guys come, and then there's these three dudes in oversized straw hats.
Like, right out of Mortal Kombat again, like Raiden, you said.
Well, I mean, not right out of Mortal Kombat, but you may say, I mean, sperm to worming Mortal Kombat, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
But Jack and Wang Chi are just, like, witnessing all of this because they're in the truck and they don't want to get killed. And eventually Jack just decides to drive through them.
Yeah.
And they jump out of the way, but he does end up hitting this other dude with his truck.
Yeah, and that dude is kind of like the big bad of this movie.
Yeah, Lo Pan. We're going to find out more about him. But it turns out they didn't even hit him. He's fine.
Right.
Everything's fucked up.
I remember them having lightning powers and stuff, but I never remember them grabbing onto a bolt of lightning and then being carried away by it like there's some, like, electrified Mary Poppins. Like,
yeah.
It's so funny.
That's supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. Awesome.
Exactly. It's a great power, just riding lightning all the while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so they don't know what to do. The girlfriend is gone. They go back to the guy's restaurant and they sort of try to formulate a plan.
Yeah.
And it's really weird because Kim Cattrall just shows up there too.
And they're like, who's this? And she's like, it's me. And why do you know anyone? Why are you here? What's going on? There's no shoe leather on any of it. So we don't know how anyone is, like, related to each other at all in this movie. We're just like, oh, these people are all in the script together.
And they have sexual tension.
It was a war, Eddie. What are you doing here?
Don't panic. It's only me, Gracie Law.
Oh, great.
I just happened to be in the neighborhood on a dark and stormy night.
This is my neighborhood.
Well, sure, it was a war. And anybody that showed up was going to join Lem Lee in the hell of being cut to pieces.
Hell of being what?
Chinese have a lot of hell.
And what the hell is Gracie Law doing here?
She can't get enough of me.
Huh. He wishes.
Yeah, well, this is a weird... Like, as we see later, everyone kind of starts pairing off. Like... Mm. It becomes like a Shakespearean comedy where they're like, everyone has to get married at the end of it. Hit it. And then, like, a song plays and the lute player comes out and they all dance. It's just like a weird – yeah, it's a weird, weird movie on a lot of levels.
Yeah. Mm. But Kim Cattrall tells them that Miao Yin is being held by some people at the White Tiger, which is a brothel And so Kurt Russell goes undercover as a nerd.
I love that this trucker character is really good at acting. Like,
he's great.
He's a great nerd, and I want to see Kurt Russell as a nerd more. I like that character a lot.
Yeah.
But why is the trucker character good at playing characters? That's what I want to know, Rob.
I don't know. Makes why no can't sense. He go to this brothel as a trucker? Truckers need love. They've got the cash.
Yeah. Like, why is it more like oh, yeah, no, this dweeb from this city in a tweed coat is coming in. Like, a trucker is going to – more truckers are going to frequent that place, I'd say.
Mm.
Dweebs and tweed.
But they infiltrate that place, and just as they're about to rescue Miao Yin, the ceiling opens up, and the three Raiden dudes drop down and kidnap her.
Anyway, so they go on the chase.
Yeah.
Now Kurt Russell, and we also meet another character at this point, because Kim Cattrall has a journalist friend.
Right.
Kim Cattrall is a lawyer who's like working to get this woman into the country, and then her lawyer, her journalist friend is kind of, I don't know, it's not a great character. They make fun of her
like,
a lot.
She's like the worst journalist basically ever.
Yeah, it's they're yeah, they kind of just make like dumb blonde jokes about this redhead all movie. Like, it's kind of yeah.
Oh yeah. I felt really bad for her also because she's like Richard Burton's daughter, you know, classical Richard Burton. I mean, they probably stole his name for Jack Burton.
Yeah.
And then they're like, "Oh, like let's make you know, this flesh and blood."
Yeah. I felt bad for her too. I mean, no character and also just
but
being
I did like,
shit on a whole movie.
I did like that John Carpenter or the people who wrote this movie did try to ground this ridiculous movie in like something real, like yeah, like human trafficking is a thing, like
yeah.
Media people should be looking into that. Maybe they don't have the courage to. I don't know.
Right.
Yeah. I'm just saying you need a burly trucker to do it. So Lo Pan, who is the mystical big boss bad guy that we saw Jack hit with his truck earlier, he is apparently also this old dude.
Yeah, it's like this crazy reveal where he comes out in the wheelchair and under like 13 pounds of makeup, he can hardly hold his head up because there's so much on it.
And he's like supposed to be like this actual Chinese businessman who is very reclusive and nobody's ever seen him. So they decide to go and infiltrate his business.
Mm-hmm.
And that is bound to be where she's being held. So they go there sort of in disguise, and I'm doing air quotes, as like a telephone repairman. Like, he's literally carrying a rotary phone in his hand.
This is gonna take crackerjack timing, Wang. Total concentration. You ready, Jack?
I was born ready.
Whoa! I love working nights.
Wait,
don't get up.
Nice.
Don't get
Hold
up.
Hold on. Company. Hi.
All right, boys, where's the main panel at? Probably through here, huh?
Good work, Jack. I think they actually fell for it.
Yeah.
And it took a long time for me to realize that this movie is making fun of itself on a lot of levels.
Yeah.
Because as a kid, when I saw it, you just take everything at face value, right?
Right.
Like, it's there's no satire to it. You just watch it. And so when I was watching it, I was like, oy, like these characters, like I'm watching it with such a critical eye because we're doing the podcast. And then when it gets to this point and he's like, yeah, we're telephone repairman. And they go in there and they go in. They're like, did that work? And he's like, I don't know. Like, we just walked by them. They didn't do anything. Like, it's just they needed – someone was like, you need an obstacle for them. And the writers were like, I don't want an obstacle. I just want to get to the next scene.
Yeah.
So they just wrote this. It was just so funny. And I started – this is kind of when the movie started being really, really charming to me.
Yeah.
So they go in and they just – they're bad telephone repairmen already.
Yeah.
But there's some cameras, so they kind of have to keep up the ruse.
I like that too. Yeah. Even though they probably don't record audio.
Yeah. Right.
But they go all through there, and there's, like, a bunch of weird shit in there. Like, they go down an elevator and end up in this, like, tank with, like, decaying bodies.
It's weird. Like, the elevator turns into a saltwater tank. Like, why would...
I know, and they're also giving us, like, this information, like, oh, this is salt water. It must be connected to the ocean. It's like, oh, well, that's going to help us out with all the things that we're confused about.
Yeah.
Blaine, it's salt water. Relax.
Don't worry.
That explains the whole lightning thing.
Yeah, they'll be able to float a little bit better. It's better for their skin. You know, yeah. And that's nice.
They get out of that, and then they're captured by one of the three storms, one of the three raiding guys, and then that's when they get sort of introduced to David Lo Pan.
Mm-hmm.
And he is, like we said, fucking old.
Yeah.
And also in a wheelchair. And he sort of reveals that he is...
And he has, like, the longest coke nail of all time. I'm just going to point it out. Right. There's, like, that one pinky. Oh, this is crazy.
I thought that was so he could play banjo. Steve Martin has one just like it.
Yeah, that's for banjo too, right, Steve?
But he is a couple thousand years old. And a long time ago, China's first sovereign emperor cast a spell on him that made him incorporeal.
Mm.
So,
yeah, no body.
Yeah, that means... no ladies can touch your junk.
That's the only thing it means.
It's the worst part. for this guy, apparently. Because he gets horny about it.
Oh, man. Yeah. Every character in this movie was written by a teenager. I don't know if it was the same teenager, but it was written by a teenager.
There was a few teenagers involved.
Oh, God.
Because he reveals his plan that he has to, in order to break his spell, he has to marry a green-eyed girl.
Right.
Which is very rare for Chinese people.
Right.
But is not so rare in this movie because both Miao Yin and Kim Cattrall's character, Gracie La, are wearing green contact lenses.
Wait, you just fucking blew my mind. Her name is Gracie La and she's a lawyer? Fuck
this. I think it is. Maybe
God damn it.
That doesn't seem...
No, it is. It is. 100% correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, Jack Burton should have just been named, like, White Savior. They should have all just had names of what they did in this movie.
Her name is Gracie Law.
There you go.
Yeah, but she had no choice but to become a lawyer. That's what happened. That's why you became a Waters.
Right. Yeah, I'm pretty salty about that, too. He needs to marry these girls and then, like, pierce their flesh to become... Like,
yeah, he's got to kill them too as well.
Yeah.
But at that point, all of the other people who have been waiting for Jack and Wang to get out, they have also sort of like broken in. And so they're all there together. And this is where they like rescue a whole bunch of women who have been like held captive.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like running and getting ready to escape. And they're like going through, you know, back through the sewer or whatever. And Jack is like to Kim Cattrall, you know, I'll go out and cause a distraction and you keep up the rear. But poor Kim Cattrall, like what happens to every Samantha in New York City, she gets kidnapped by a Sasquatch.
She sees these eyes that are watching her and then, like, looks closer.
Right. Like, there's, like, this
why would
like,
you look closer?
Statue and then these fake eyes go away and then a different pair of fake eyes appears.
That's so weird. But, yeah, a very hirsute gentleman kidnaps her. And the people that they went in to rescue, they've rescued dozens of other people.
Yeah.
But not the two women in this movie.
They left them behind. That's the tricky part. It's like you go to the grocery store, you forget what you came for.
Right. Yeah, yeah. They needed to put a note on their phone.
But I want to talk about this monster more.
What?
What movie did it come from? Did it wander on set from a different film? Like, I don't know. Was it like a rejected Harry and the Hendersons costume?
All this is just so. his whole face is like they took Harry and the Henderson and just smushed it. It's a weird left turn in a movie full of left turns.
It should be a right turn then. I'm not a trucker.
But we're going in circles. Yeah. Man. Yeah, that monster is weird. It comes out of nowhere to kidnap Kim Cattrall. And then the next scene is kind of like, I can only imagine the makeup department was like, you want to put us, what makeup? You want to put us on Kim Cattrall? Okay. This is really going to read well in 30 years. Great.
Right.
So
yeah.
They put her in the geisha makeup. It's weird because she has some agency a little bit. Like she gets mesmerized by the guy's eyes, but then she breaks out of it only to be mesmerized by the guy's eyes again.
Yeah.
Like, there's no reason for her to break out of it and look around. I don't know.
This part's also a bit confusing because for whatever reason, the guy makes the Storms do like a karate demonstration for them. It's like part of the wedding ceremony. It's like, yeah, I mean, you know, I'm marrying these two girls, they're going to want to see some karate.
Yeah, yeah. I'm pretty old. Can you show them how virile you are? Because that would really help me out.
You're going to be doing most of the work, Storms. This is sort of a Hugh Hefner situation. I'm just going to be watching.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. Well,
there's also, like, the fun part where, like, he, like, makes them, like, hold on to these swords. And then the swords glow like white hot and then lifts them into the air.
And they touch like a silver bell at the top.
Yeah.
Silver
it's basically bells. Like, what's that, Shenyun Orchestra, you know?
It is not that at all.
No?
No.
Okay.
No.
It's very acrobatic, though.
But this movie would purport that to be true, I'm sure. This movie is seven Sundays from appropriate. Oh, God.
It's a lot of things.
Yeah.
But yes, that's when he declares, you know what? I'm going to marry them both. Because why not? He's 2,000 years old. He's worked hard for this.
God, yeah.
At this point is where they have to go and rescue them because it's the wedding ceremony and they've got to be wedding crashers about that, pick up some bridesmaids.
Right.
And it's, you know, it's this is not – it's not like a Western wedding ceremony. So there's a little bit of difference. There's the whole love needle aspect.
That's what he calls his penis. And it's not a flattering name. I don't know why he'd call it that. Pick something a little girthier. But yeah. No, he does have to like pierce their wrists with
a giant knitting needle.
Yeah, and then he like uses his coke nail to do it. He's just really improvising at that point. He's lost the thread.
Yeah.
It's bad.
But they're getting ready to rescue them, and this is where the big fight scene happens, except for Jack, who shoots the archway above him and gets knocked out by
And this is why I fell in love with this movie, because you have this, like, John McClane guy who, I'm Jack Burton, and I'm cocky, and I'm kissing the girl without her permission, and she's very upset about it, and I'm still grinding up on her like a fucking perv, and I'm gonna kill everyone and talk a big game, and he is a smoking ad for the rest of the – he's just, like, so impotent for the, like, rest of this movie.
Yeah.
And I love it.
Right.
It just takes the wind out of the action hero's sails so well. And the end of the movie is where I think they kind of ruin it. For me.
Okay.
But the
big battle's happening in – there's like a neon statue that's there.
Yeah.
And I mean all the
– it looks like a New Yorker's loft basically.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And yeah, all the Chinese guys are kicking lots of ass and Kurt Russell picks himself up off the floor eventually and they go after Lo Pan. Who has Miao Yin.
Oh, not so fast, gentlemen.
Oh, is it too much to ask, Thunder? Kill him for me!
Won't solve anything, Dave. Too many people around here been dropping like flies already, and where's that getting us, huh? Nowhere. Fast. You know what old Jack Burton always says at a time like this?
Who?
Jack Burton. Me. Jack always says, what the hell?
He throws his knife, the knife that he's been, you know, playing with the whole movie, misses.
Right.
Spectacularly.
Yeah, yeah. Hits the gong, which is a great little sound effect there. Boom.
Yeah, and it's only when Lo Pan throws the knife back that Jack's reflexes allow him to grab the knife in midair, throw it back, hit him straight in the forehead. Bam.
Yeah.
America.
And that's why I didn't like the movie, because he's such an impotent character the entire way through, and then he's the person to, like, take down the big bad guy. It was definitely America. It was definitely like World War II. Like, we're going to let everyone else fight for the longest time, and then we're going to come in, like, really late, and then we're going to be the people that take all the credit. I don't know. Like,
still sore about that, huh?
I just feel like Passchendaele should have known. But, yeah, I just feel like it was very much a – at that point, I was like, ugh.
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah, but it's not over yet, because they still have to fight the three shadows. Or, I mean, the one guy just gets mad and puffs himself up and
I don't understand this whatsoever. They're like, we can't fight him. He's too strong. And then he's like, oh, and he starts, like, getting into the whole thing. And he just explodes himself when he could have easily killed them using any other means.
Well, I think he exploded himself out of grief.
Oh, wow.
For his master.
I thought it was kind of like a metaphor for anger and like the fact that if you carry your anger with you, it really just hurts you, you know? Learn to forgive people.
Should I?
So, yeah, then they kill everyone and they get out of there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they're all safe.
Yeah.
They all go back to the restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, like you said, they sort of pair off.
Yep.
You know?
And then Jack can't. You know, he's just...
He's not a man to settle down. His life is the open road on the Pork Chop Express.
He's got to get back to that vehicle.
You know?
Where he's really... That's the thing he's really in love with.
His life is his sandwich. That's the whole reason why he was going on this crazy adventure. He just wanted to get his truck back.
Just give me my truck back. Does it go back to the guy who was telling the story at the beginning?
No.
So you kind of left the thread dropped there.
Yeah, that's right. The X-File guy is like, you know what? I don't think I'm going to be your lawyer.
You should get Gracie Law.
She'll take any case. And that's Big Trouble in Little China. We have, or I have, some trivia for you, Blaine.
Oh, I can't wait.
And we're going to do the whole behind the scenes thing to try to glean how this batshit crazy movie came together after this break.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to Rewatchability. We are talking about Big Trouble in Little China. Blaine.
Rob.
We've been through so much already.
We even talked about the brain guy with the eyes.
Yeah.
What the hell? It looked like a Doom character.
I thought it was like the thing from Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh,
like the
yeah.
Beholder.
Okay. Yeah.
Know what I'm talking about?
No, not at all.
No,
I'm just
me
nodding. So, yeah, it was just, there's so many weirdnesses to it. None of it. Oh. We didn't even talk about the Sasquatch guy coming back and being on the truck at the end.
Oh, yeah.
It's like the X-Files, like, dun-dun, to be continued.
I would like to see one more scene where the Sasquatch, like, climbs into the passenger seat,
yeah.
And then they become buddies going down on the open road.
Yeah. Jack just, like, hands him the hoagie. He's like, yeah, I'm so hungry. Thank
Jack
you.
Jack and Sasquatch. It's like a talking blues tune. Want to tell you a story.
About me and Sasquatch.
Yeah.
Heading on down the road.
Sasquatch and Bobby McGee.
Okay, so what are the trivias you got for me?
Okay.
All the trivias, give them to me.
Okay, I don't think that's a plural of trivia.
Okay, we got it.
Okay.
I'm an English major.
So this film features some work by Al Leong, who has made a name for himself as a henchman in a lot of 80s movies. You may recognize him from the long hair, yet sort of balding. Also the Fu Manchu mustache.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Can you picture who I'm talking about?
Oh, like just barely, yes.
Okay, well, it's going to make this question difficult because I want you to name one other movie that he's appeared in.
Oh.
And he's appeared in all of them, so you basically just have to name one movie. No, wait. I'm kidding. But he's obviously been in less than that, but he was in pretty much anything.
Him. I can picture him. It's like it's in another action movie where he plays like a terrorist kind of guy. I'm going to say Die Hard.
Plan. Come on.
No.
That's weak.
Yeah, is
it? It's Die Hard!
Yes!
Yes, he is in Die Hard.
Oh, I worked hard for that.
As well as many other films. He's in Lethal Weapon. He also appeared in They Live, also by John Carpenter. And, of course, he played Genghis Khan in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Oh, great.
Yeah. I like when I see that guy in things.
Yeah. Yeah, he's great. Great.
Yeah. There are a lot of great actors, many of them who we don't really recognize because they're not white people.
Thanks, 80s and 90s and 2010s and a lot of 2015s. Anyway, go on.
Yeah, so I definitely did do some IMDb work on some of the other people who appeared in this film as well, like James Hong, who played Lo Pan. He has appeared in a lot of things.
Oh, I bet, yeah. Like, I recognize him from a lot of things.
Most recently, he was in Kung Fu Panda.
Oh, nice.
And Kung Fu Panda 2, The Awesomeness.
Mm-hmm.
And he also appeared before this in Blade Runner as Hannibal Chu.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Didn't the writer of this write Blade Runner?
Total
Recall.
Yeah, you're not far off. One of the writers did a punch-up on Total Recall and wrote a draft of Minority Report and wrote the Nicolas Cage movie Next. So those are all Philip K. Dick adaptations.
Yeah, and this is not.
This is not. But it's as well put together as a Philip K. Dick adaptation.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Okay, so question number two.
Oh, dos.
This one's going to be tough.
Okay.
So the group who plays the title song, Big Trouble in Little China, features three people who were connected to the Halloween franchise. Who are they, and what were their roles?
Jesus Christ. Was John Carpenter?
That's one of them.
Three of them? You son of a bitch. What were the composers for both movies? Was that another one?
John Carpenter?
I guess. Shit. I'm no.
Okay. Maybe not fair.
John Carpenter.
So the band.
And John Carpenter.
It was three John Carpenters.
It was John and the Carpenters.
No, the other two guys were Nick Castle, who...
obviously. Yeah, I should have got that one. You son of a bitch.
Well, he only played one of the most famous horror villains of all time, Michael Myers, in the original Halloween.
Okay.
So if you don't know that, maybe you just don't know enough about movies.
I don't. I have to rewatch all of them, Rob, just to understand them.
Oh, and he also, I should mention, Nick Castle reprised his role in the Danny McBride Halloween last year.
There you go.
Yeah, so, yeah.
I thought those movements were familiar.
And also Tommy Lee Wallace, who was the editor on Halloween and also directed and wrote Halloween 3, was also in that band.
Married to Pamela Anderson, eh? That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
That's punching above his weight, I'd say.
But I fucking love this song. And by love it, I mean, what the fuck, man? I love that John Carpenter was like, well, I made this movie. Now I'm going to go compose the score.
Yep.
And now I'm going to make this like rockin' new wave 80s theme song.
Big Trouble.
And I believe that John Carpenter is actually singing parts of the song, too. I think he does the Big Trouble. And then one of the other guys.
That's some big bass.
I can't tell which. Does the Little China.
Oh, my Lord. Yeah. I mean, that song is beautiful.
It is beautiful.
I think I had it at my wedding. I'm pretty sure.
I remember.
The first
dance.
That
was your first dance. Your wife was angry, and that's why she filed for an annulment.
So what's your third question there?
This one you probably won't get because it's a bit random, but which actor from Big Trouble in Little China appears in a Jack Kerouac book, Big Sur.
He's the actor?
Yeah, which actor was written about by Jack Kerouac? If an actor was written about by Jack Kerouac, you would know about it.
Yeah.
He wrote On the Road?
Sorry, what? I mean, Kurt Russell?
Obviously not.
Oh, man.
No, the correct answer is Victor Wong, who plays Egg Chen.
Okay.
He had a...
Yeah, perfect name, by the way. Not racist at all.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
He had a crazy and interesting life.
Mm.
He studied...
He was in Tremors, right?
He was in Tremors.
Oh, he's so good. Graboids. Yeah.
And he also plays the grandpa in Three Ninjas.
Yes!
Yeah!
Oh, my God.
But he was an artist in the 60s, and he studied under Mark Rothko.
What?
Yeah.
Jesus.
And then, yeah, he met Jack Kerouac in the 60s. He was way into the beat scene, man.
That's awesome.
He had his, like, paintings exhibited at the City Lights bookstore. He was friends with Lawrence Ferlinghetti. And, yeah, he was written about in Big Sur as the character Arthur Ma.
That's awesome.
Yeah. What a life.
I love that.
And then he's in this movie, and I think he's great in this movie.
Yeah, he's funny.
You know, yeah.
He knows what this movie is.
Exactly.
I think there are a lot of people who don't know what this movie is in this movie.
Well, I think it takes a little bit of both. You have to both be aware of it, but then also take it too seriously in order
right,
for
because,
it to work.
Yeah, because it deserves that. It needs that.
For sure.
Yeah.
Now, this movie didn't have, like, the smoothest development. It was originally written as a Western.
Jesus.
That took place at the turn of the century.
And then it was mixed with a nursery rhyme. And a guy listened to his dog bark while he was on acid and wrote down what the dog said.
Yes.
Like, that feels like what this – so it was a Western to begin with.
Yeah. Taking place in the 1880s. It was written by Gary Goldman and David Z. Weinstein. And they sold it to a studio.
Not that Weinstein.
No, okay. Not that Weinstein. Though, yeah. Again, I checked.
After seeing this movie, why wouldn't you?
That's right. And they were paid to do rewrites of it. They were paid to do one rewrite of it, but then the studio asked them to do another
remix.
Rewrite. Yeah. And they refused to update it into the modern era.
Wow.
And so they were replaced. The guy that replaced them with W.D. Richter, he went on to direct Buckaroo Banzai.
Oh, that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. And he also – he's the one who – I think he also had credits on Total Recall and the other one. But yeah, he
– So he came in, updated it from the 1800s.
That's right. Yeah. And then John Carpenter said he also changed a few things and took out some of the things that were would be offensive to Chinese Americans.
Oh, good.
Some of the things.
Glad someone really went through that with a fine-tooth comb.
Yeah, but they originally...
I think the world, China is very mad at certain countries in the world, and U.S. being one of them. I think they finally saw this movie like we did. I think they finally saw it, and they were like, no, enough of this. Fuck you guys.
I mean, it was a commercial failure. It made $11.1 million from a budget of $25 million.
Ooh.
Yes.
Where did the money go on this movie?
Well, there was a lot of sets built. Like, they built a three-story Chinatown to shoot in. And, yeah, there's lots of special effects. Though they only spent about $1 million on the monster-type effects, which John Carpenter was not too happy with how they turned out. And the guys from the effects studio were like, $1 million. You get what you pay for, John. Before John Carpenter was attached, they were looking at some other people to be the role of Jack Burton. The first person they thought of was Clint Eastwood.
Yeah.
Are you feeling lucky, punk?
I'm sure Clint Eastwood would have been all for this movie. I'm surprised Kurt Russell was all for this movie. It's such a weird one. But I feel like this came after The Thing, right?
Yeah.
So Carpenter still had like a good relationship. He had a relationship with Kurt Russell, and that's why he kind of probably was able to talk. But this, like, reading the script, you'd be like, "What is this?
Well, he
who is this for?"
Kurt Russell did say that he had some trouble finding the angle for the character.
Yeah.
But eventually, he feels like he did.
I think he did it well. Like, yeah, he's like, you have to have such swagger to like make the impotence work. You know?
Yeah, for sure. And that's like exactly what John Carpenter was trying for. He did want to make a kung fu movie, but he also wanted to make a movie that was subverting like many of the stereotypes of the sort of movies that were being produced at the time, yeah, which would typically feature like a very competent Caucasian hero and then like his stereotype sidekick.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, who does, you know, all the martial arts stuff. You know, like the Green Hornet
sort Kato, of. Yeah.
Yeah.
Temple of Doom. Yeah.
Yeah. So John Carpenter wanted to subvert that. So he and Kurt Russell both talk about this character as being like totally incompetent, as, right, yeah, being full of bravado. And he is very much like emblematic of like the stereotypical American man, like especially the American man as you see it in these sorts of movies. He's a tough dude. He's a lone wolf. He loves his truck.
Yeah.
But he's not going to get tied down by some woman.
Not even Samantha.
Not even Samantha. Well, story of her life.
Canada's Kim Cattrall.
Yeah. Well, you know, while I was doing research for the trivia, I found out some interesting facts. Mm. You know, our Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau.
Yeah.
She has been mistaken for Justin Trudeau's mom.
Oh, God.
Like,
really?
Yeah, like the media was like, put a picture of Kim Cattrall and was like, Justin Trudeau's mom. But here's the crazy thing.
It was just because she was in her geisha makeup. And they were like, you know, well, he does the party stuff, so must be her.
The crazy thing is that she did date Pierre Elliott Trudeau, Justin Trudeau's dad.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, because a lot of people don't know this. Our former Prime Minister Trudeau, the dead one, was a slut.
He made the rounds.
He made the rounds.
He was a pretty charming guy, though.
He was a swinging bachelor when he was first elected.
Yeah. And there's that story of this news reporter that like snuck into this party, this fancy shindig that he was having. Mm-hmm. And when she snuck in through the basement window, she like caught a snag on her dress and she found him, danced with him, and said, you know, I snuck in here. I even have a hole in my dress. And he was like, yeah, but in all the right places. He's like this like suave ass like that's funny. There's also the that like Che Guevara is actually Justin Trudeau's dad.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. So, I mean,
that's funny.
Justin Trudeau's parents were very free people.
It was the '70s. What are you gonna do?
He was prime minister. She was dating the Rolling Stones.
What are you going to do with a goldfish bowl full of keys? You know? You got to do something with it.
Okay, some other random stuff. Let me shoehorn this stuff in before we finish her up. For Wang Chi, they originally wanted to get a little-known actor named Jackie Chan.
Oh.
But the producers weren't convinced that he was good enough with English.
Okay.
So like they the Arnie didn't. Syndrome. Yeah, even though John Carpenter wanted to cast him following the success of Police Story,
right,
they wouldn't let him. So they got the other guy, Dennis Dunn, instead, who I think is great. He does a great job as like the de facto protagonist of this film.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. He's funny. His reactions are all very like very precise.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed that. Like, all his looks, very comedic. I liked him. I enjoyed him.
Yeah, though I feel bad that he has to do the whole like nothing or double thing at the beginning of the movie.
Right.
I'm like, come on.
I know.
Come on.
Yeah, you know, you can get a lead, but you're still going to have to do the awful things.
Yeah. But as I mentioned, this movie did bomb. It made only $11.1 million, though it's since become a cult hit. Obviously, yeah, like all the movies of John Carpenter, especially their early ones, have been reevaluated in their critical context as John Carpenter, the auteur, mm-hmm, the person who, you know, defined horror for many of us.
Right.
And yeah, people love this movie now. It's big. It's a big movie. But they say that a lot of the blame for its failure was placed on another movie, Aliens, because apparently Alien came out, Alien Singular came out 16 days after this. So John Carpenter thinks the anticipation for Alien, people are like, well, am I going to see Big Trouble in Little China when Alien comes out in 16 days? That's barely half a month.
I love that he blames that instead of this shit show of a movie.
Yeah. But he became very disillusioned with Hollywood.
Yeah.
And he quit Hollywood after this and swore to go back to independent filmmaking.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what did he do after this?
Well, he did a lot of movies. They did They Live was after this.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And
cult favorite too.
The aforementioned Ghosts of Mars.
Yeah, okay, yeah. That happened.
Yeah. He did, I think, eventually, you know, do movies back within the Hollywood system. But,
yeah.
I mean, I think maybe he was misdirecting some of the blame for this one. Because it was really just before its time.
Yeah. I mean, no one could make this movie again. This movie is never going to be made again.
No. I mean, it is like a special intersection, right? Between, like, John Carpenter is obviously trying to make a movie that is like a Chinese action movie, but he's an outsider.
Yeah.
He's doing it as an outsider. Mm-hmm. He's doing it sort of from an outsider's perspective. Like, that is what Kurt Russell sort of represents.
Yeah, but I think the setting also represents that. It's still in New York, you know?
San Francisco.
Sorry, San Francisco. It's still in like a big U.S. city. So it is like an outsider's view of like – it's not in China itself, you know? So,
yeah. Well, and it does –
I like that.
He does – a lot of it is apparently based on like real history about San Francisco's Chinatown. Mm. And so –
like the Sasquatch and the
– Yeah,
brain,
the Sasquatch.
Stuff,
yeah. The Sasquatch was also a big part of the Beat movement.
Oh, didn't know that. Yeah, yeah.
Dated Allen Ginsberg.
Oh, wow.
So – but I mean, like all the stuff about like,
you know, yeah,
how the Chinese community came and how they built up like that particular part of town, and like some of the gangs that are referenced in the movie are referencing real gangs that, you know, operated in that space.
When I think Big Trouble in Little Chinatown, I think history lesson. And I'm glad I'm right on that.
But you have to like base it on the real stuff.
Right.
And then you put in like the crazy Sasquatch and the magical powers. I mean, it is all over the place, but it also like it influenced a lot. Like we talked about Mortal Kombat, Raiden was just totally taken from the Storms and Shang Tsung.
Yeah.
Totally taken from Lo Pan.
Right.
And there's a whole bunch of other stuff. Like, watching this movie, the thing that I thought about was Double Dragon. Like, it feels like...
Definitely.
You know, that sort of, like, mixture of, like, yeah, like, urban America plus...
Yes. When the U.S., like, fell in love with martial arts.
Yeah.
And the culture behind it, yeah.
Yeah.
Karate Kid is coming out soon, all that stuff, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I say that this movie would never be made now, but I think there's a remake...
Well,
in the works.
It's not a remake. Don't call it a remake. It's a sequel. And it is going to be starring the only actor left, Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Of course.
He's the only guy there is. There's nobody else.
Oh, Jesus.
So he's going to be playing all the characters.
Except for Kevin Hart, who is playing a Chinese man.
That's right. Yeah, and apparently it is, I think, going ahead. They were talking about it. I think the last bit of news that came out was in 2018. So I would assume that it's going to happen. Kurt Russell is okay with it. He is also a player in the Fast and the Furious franchise.
Right.
He's been in Fast Furious 7 and Fast Furious 8 as Mr. Nobody.
Mm.
So he has a little bit of a kinship with The Rock.
Right.
So he said that he's okay with it. He probably won't show up in it, but he's fine if The Rock wants to go and have his little adventure.
He'll show up in it. He'll be a floating lung or something like that. He'll be fine.
But John Carpenter, he is not so impressed. He doesn't think that it needs to be redone. And he says it's basically they need a vehicle for The Rock and they don't really care about his movie or him. It's just about putting Dwayne Johnson.
Yeah. Of course it is.
Yeah.
Of course it is. I mean, yeah, but like, I'm sure he's just saying, like, just re-release the first one. Just don't put it 16 days before Alien is, you know, Prometheus is released.
Yeah. well, that shouldn't be a problem.
But there is a lot to hate in this movie, and I understand why it didn't do well. It's also like it suffers from the Princess Bride syndrome a little bit, too, of being so many different movies in one.
Right.
Like, there is that Western. There is that Kung Fu movie. It's an action. It's an American action movie at the same time. It's a comedy. It's all over the place. It's an assault on one culture. It is like all over the place. And so I think that people talking about that movie are like, how was it? Like, I don't know what I watched.
Yeah.
Like, I can't tell you how it was because it defies so many, so much of what I see day to day.
It's a lot to grasp.
Yeah.
So, Blaine, did you think that Big Trouble in Little China was rewatchable?
I think that there
Speed
are
it up, okay?
There are a lot of shut up. Give me my time. You can speed it up after. Just put it at like 1.7 or something. I think there are a lot of movies that are not good movies, but that are enjoyable to watch. And this is one of them. I enjoyed watching it every fucking scene. I was just like, what now? Like, what did you do? I loved that surprise. I loved that. Yeah, I liked a lot. I thought that Kurt Russell did a pretty good job after saying he didn't know what he was doing. It seemed like he did.
Yeah.
Kim Cattrall is a treat. I really enjoy
it. Isn't she?
I really enjoy Kim Cattrall. I think she's funny in this movie, mm-hmm. and she's a good actress. And yeah, it came together more and more as I watched it, and I realized what I was watching. But it's a hard one to get into. It's a weird movie.
It's a weird movie.
What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really love the kind of movies that it's subverting.
Right.
I don't. It takes a lot for me to get into an action movie. But I did find myself enjoying parts of it. It is like all over the place, and like trying to like watch it with any sort of critical eye is futile.
Yeah. Yes. I think that's the word I was searching for in that, like, 7-minute pause.
But I also think, like, this movie, like, it became beloved by, like, embracing its badness. Like,
The Room or, like, stuff like that.
Yeah, and, yeah. like, it obviously not all of it is bad because John Carpenter is a masterful film director. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's done a million films that are very well made. He can do anything even when you know,
but it's hard. Like you watched I watched The Thing, like 3 days before I watched this, and it's night and day. You know, it is.
But The Thing is also crazy. You know,
The Thing is also crazy, but it's crazy in such a definable way. Whereas this is just like, what am I watching?
The first 10 minutes of The Thing, you see some guy shoot a dog.
Yeah, and what's up with that dog? It doesn't like. The dog's not immediately floating in the air and someone's speaking through it and then there's a lot of hoops to jump through to enjoy this movie, but if you can, if you haven't seen it ever before or if you want to revisit it, it's crazier than you remember.
Yeah, it definitely is.
Which is fun for a rewatch, which is really, so I'm going to say it's rewatchable.
I'm going to say it's rewatchable too.
I'm glad we did it.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's rewatchability for this week. You can find us on Apple Podcasts or on any of the other many podcatchers out there. We're on Stitcher, Spotify, Podbean.
Yeah.
And you should check those out. Don't give in to the homogeny of Apple Podcasts unless you want to. We also, you can follow us on Twitter and Facebook. And if you'd like to donate, you can go to patreon.com/rewatchability. And if you'd like to support us in a different way, you could buy a rewatchability t-shirt. And that is at tpublic.com/rewatchability. And we will be back next week with a movie that is hopefully less crazy than this.
Hold up. Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.